Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We're coming to H-Town. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Wednesday to all of you. This is where we would normally bump in with the final call of an Astros game. Even a loss we would bump in with if it were exciting, but that was trash last night, man.
That was
a lot of time not well spent.
The Astros are destroying my marriage, Sean. I might be sleeping in your place soon. Yeah. Thanks a lot, Astros.
Well, this is why...
Brandy's a grumpy... I'll be careful because I'm trying to salvage my marriage.
Yeah.
She does not handle losses well at all.
I like that,
particularly
though.
Ugly losses. Yeah. Oh, you like it? That's nice. It's good for you.
No, I like
good
that.
Good for you,
no,
pro wrestling fan Sean Pendergast. You love the drama. You love the misery.
That's why when Amy and I were looking at what high rise to move into, we're like, well, we got to get a 2-bedroom. And Amy's like, why? I'm like, Seth's marriage could fall apart at any second.
Because the Astros are going to be half a minor league team this
year. The window's closing, Amy. You know, like this.
Brandy and I had a long discussion about, like, I'm relatively calm, cool, and collected about death in general.
Mm-hmm.
I have a philosophical view to it, and she does not. So we had a long discussion the other day about, you know, how can she get more comfortable with with death, people dying,
sure,
and the inevitability of it,
yeah, man,
and all. And I thought, you know, it helped her a little bit. And then last night, the Astros lose an ugly game, and it's like, this is worse than any... Worse than I've ever felt during when anybody's ever died. So I think all is lost, basically.
I start winning some games. It would help.
Astros, come on. Do me a favor and save my marriage.
Hashtag okay? Save Seth's marriage. That's the new... it used to be rude.
She treats me like ass, man. She treats me like a dirty dog. When the Astros lose, I try to be nice and tender and everything, and she's just got no room or capacity for it.
Is it just losing, or is it like nights last night where they lose and they're just completely flaccid?
I think it's that. It's more than anything. When it's ugly, yeah. When it's kind of, I think that's where the coach in her feels like when you're a coach of a team and you put out a performance like that
where
nothing goes right. If I'm going to count my blessings instead of my curses, at least Jeremy Pena, Jose Altuve, and Josh Myers didn't all die on a collision. On a near collision in the seventh inning.
Yeah, dude. It's funny. Anytime something like that happens, I just blame Jake Myers immediately. Like, I had my back turned to the TV. Amy was watching it. I was at the counter on the computer, and I heard the play. I heard Callis describing the play, and I turn around, and there's just three bodies sprawled on the field. And one of them's Jake Myers. I'm like, it's got to be Jake's fault. it's got to be.
Of course, you heard the dings. Those weren't positive reinforcement dings. That was my wife commanding me to say, make sure they know I'm not mad at the boys. My heart just can't take it.
Just at you. Just at you. I got to look at your face while they're losing these games.
I'm not mad at the boys. I'm mad at your stupid face.
Your face.
I have my challenges too, man. I got into it on Alpha Male Twitter yesterday because I tried to explain to somebody why women don't like it when you walk past them and you say, hey, you should smile more. And of course I tried to explain it from a woman's point of view. So of course now I'm just a simp.
Oh, you know? Yeah, yeah.
Because I tried to explain to some dude why who insists that women should like this thing that most women really hate. I'm just being a simp.
You don't tip your toe in that water very much anymore. That's an interesting...
I know.
That's an interesting battle to go fight.
It was weird. I didn't fight the battle. I left. I muted the tab. I was getting destroyed by real men, Sean. Real men.
Okay. See, that's good. That's growth. Like, you know what? I'm gonna throw a few punches and I'm gonna know when to bail and just make sure I stay in a good headspace. I like that.
Oh no, I wasn't even throwing punches. I was like, listen, women don't like it because you're telling them what to do.
Yeah. We'll circle back to the Astros in the next segment. The time well spent yesterday was waiting for all the push notifications to come about the Texans paring down their roster. I printed up all the cuts and the waivers and things like that, so I've got it handy. But I would say the biggest thing that played out, in relation to what we've been talking about the last few days, Cam Akers ended up making this team. So I almost, and British Brooks did too. We can talk about that.
Yeah.
You were psyched about that. You tweeted that. You were excited.
It's for the only thing that's saving my marriage at this point. British Brooks
as a quasi fullback.
Yes, that is an old school. I tell you, we'll get into British Brooks a little bit later. I do like what it might mean for Dameon Pierce though too.
I do too.
Dameon does best with a lead blocker.
Yeah.
And he's not. British Brooks, if they use him as a fullback, as they did in that last preseason game, he's not one of these new age hybrid tight end fullbacks.
Right.
6'3" dudes just cannot generally, it's really rare that they can get in and root out linebackers and defensive linemen the way a stout, shorter dude can.
Yep.
And Brooks has that in him, man. He's got dog. He's a genuine dog.
Yeah, absolutely. I saw two tweets from you yesterday. One, you were excited about Brooks making the team, and then you retweeted that video of him going low kneel on a guy, Lorenzo Neal, on that Rams guy. Dude, he knocked that guy the F out. Like, that was
And it
was
looked
sweet.
Like he wanted to throw a three-punch combo afterwards. He was like pumped. Standing kind of ready.
Yeah.
You know? It was like when a guy goes down and the boxer is still in fight mode.
Yeah, man.
You know, kind of like standing over him. That's what it looked like. It was beautiful.
British Brooks. So the Pierce and Akers thing. So Dameon Pierce not dressing for the game on Saturday, seeming to be a made guy and making this team despite performing possibly the worst out of all the running backs in the preseason. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's unfair. Had been a big source of contention with Texan fans to where it's like, man, they need to trade him. He can't be on this team. And I think there was a genuine fear that Nick Caserio and D'Amico Ryans, that somehow maybe if they have a blind spot for Pierce, that it also bled into being a blind spot for Cam Akers being good. That wasn't the case. And Cam Akers ended up making the team. And we'll wait and see what the first depth chart looks like, if that means anything. The first depth chart has Mixon 1, Pierce 2, Akers 3. People are going to be texting and freaking out about that, I'm sure. But for now, as long as Akers is on the team, I think there's a good chance Pierce is still on this team because they just haven't found a trade that they feel is a good trade yet to move Dameon
Pierce. I do also think that right now at the beginning of the season, before injuries start mounting up, and I'm not saying in a drastic fashion, it's the NFL, there's going to be injuries, that you've got a little bit of room. You know, you've got a couple of your players parked on IR and Christian Harris and Kurt Heinisch who are eligible to return after week 4.
Yep.
So if what they're hoping for is that it just clicks for Dameon, and especially, again, if British Brooks can be a more of an old school genuine fullback, except that also can be a receiver out of the backfield, can be used as a running back, he has that versatility, then they might be able to do more of the things that Dameon Pierce is good at.
Yeah.
And maybe he reclaims it a little bit. So I'm open to that as long as it's not sucking from the other position groups right now.
Yeah, like for now, now that Akers has made the team, that was my biggest fear, is they were going to keep Dameon and cut Cam Akers. I wasn't fearful of it because I think, like, D'Amico and Nick are smart guys. They observe and see that Cam Akers is really good. For now, Pierce is really only keeping a spot from, like, Allie Gay, you know, or the sixth cornerback or something. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he's not.
That's the one.
I don't view him as a running back. I view him as a back end of the roster guy.
You'd usually. You know, 9 would be the standard number of defensive linemen you keep. That's not like a hard and fast rule or anything. But if you consider, okay, they're one shy on the defensive line right now, then at the beginning of the season. And I think both, if either Solomon Bird and Ali Gay or either of those guys can be on the practice squad, I don't think they'd be nervous about those guys playing in a regular season game.
No,
it's just it's a really packed defensive end roster right now. Like, and if Jerry Hughes wasn't here, I think maybe they would have kept one of those guys.
Well, D'Nico Autry's going to come back after 6 games, so you're going to have a numbers issue there when he comes back. And you're right. Like, Ali Gay, Solomon Bird are in that sweet spot of practice squad guys that, hey, you feel good if they have to. You know, you're okay if one of them has to come up and play a game, but you're also not fearful that some team's going to pluck them off your practice squad and put them on their 53-man roster.
Right. Yeah, both those guys, they don't necessarily flash in that, like, oh, wow, this guy might be a future Yordan Alvarez type of athlete or something.
Yep.
So, I'm comfortable with where the defensive line is right now.
Christian Harris on IR, you touched on that, so he's gone for at least 4 games. That's worrisome. Case Keenum done for the season. He had a foot injury that I guess he'd been dealing with all of camp, and he aggravated it enough against the Rams to where he is done for the year now.
It does nothing for the Texans right now, but I feel a little bit better for Case in that he just, his throws were a little bit off in these last couple performances, and apparently the foot has been bothering him. It seemed like most of his completions in that Rams game were a little off, you know, which gave the receivers an opportunity to, Xavier Hutchinson especially, to showcase, show a little extra, okay, he got that behind himself but kept moving. So, on the one hand, all right, well, it makes sense that Case was a little bit off, but also he's in an age where, these things tend to happen. You tend to get injured more.
They're definitely going to pick up a quarterback and put one on the practice squad just so they have one for scout team, if no other reason. So there'll be a quarterback coming in. I'm guessing Tim Boyle.
Might be Tim Boyle.
Yeah, on the practice squad. I'm guessing it's Tim Boyle. He got cut yesterday. As far as Case goes, I feel bad for Case, obviously. He's a Houston legend. I do, the one thing, the one saving grace, and this may sound a little callous given he just got put on IR yesterday, but given the fact that Davis Mills has looked more like a real backup quarterback this preseason, what you were looking to get out of Case this year, unless there was massive injuries at quarterback, obviously, but in a perfect world, what you were looking to get out of Case, you probably still get out of him, assuming he's in the building every day.
I would expect Case will be in the building.
I
think he's... people have always talked about, at some point he'll be a great coach. You never know if a guy genuinely wants to go into coaching or not. It's a pretty big time commitment.
Right.
And Case is an ultimate family dude. But for now, I think he'll be in the building. He'll be around. He'll be a resource for those guys. And Andy might... It might be a nice little experiment for him to just try his hand at coaching.
Yeah.
I won't be surprised if we hear stories about, Case is actually in the game planning meetings and all that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, this does give him an opportunity to, more thoroughly dip his toe in the coaching water if he's not focused on actually playing potentially.
Plus, as one starting quarterback once told me, Sean, after he got benched, checks don't change.
Okay. I need you to name names during the break.
It wasn't a guy I played with. It was a guy I knew, and I called him after. I was trying to bolster him up, and he was like, he didn't say it with that much. It was a little bit of an edge to it. He was kind of pissed, but he was like, checks don't change.
That's funny. That's good. Hey, man.
Still getting mine.
You got to have a good outlook on it. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. We'll circle back to the Astros. How's Justin Verlander feeling two starts into his return? Last night was not the best. Astros lose 5-0. Still 3.5 games up on the Mariners. The Mariners stink. They lost last night to the Rays, so thank you, Tampa. We'll get on the Astros coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Down the first base side, diving stop by Harper, just like he did last night. He makes an excellent play against the Astros in the final inning of the game, and that'll do it. The Astros shut out tonight as the Phillies use three pitchers to combine on a six-hit shutout and win this game 5-0. The Astros have now lost 6 out of 8, and right now their lead in the AL West is down to 3 games. The Mariners will play later on tonight at home against Tampa Bay.
Mariners lost, so it's still 3.5 games, same as they came into yesterday with. The Astros lose, the Mariners lose. Text message: I like Brandy more and more. I find myself watching Mariners losses highlights to make me feel better. That's from a texter. If you missed it, Brandy almost murdered Seth last night for doing nothing but sitting next to him, next to her during a or sitting next to him. Sitting next to him during a game in which the Astros were playing very, very poorly.
No, it was worse than that because I was supposed to do a live stream earlier in the day and I had to get it in. So I was like, okay, I'm going to do a half hour just reaction to the 53-man roster. And at about the half hour mark, I said, hey, I got to get going because I promised my wife I'd watch the second half of the Astros game. And a bunch of people said, Don't worry about it, bro. Don't bother. Yeah. So I stayed in, and after telling Brandy that I was only going to be a half hour, I was. I got in right after the end of the Astros game was over.
Okay. Yeah.
I went. Went long. I went long on the. I spent tender time with my YouTube viewers.
That's a little
instead
detail.
Of my wife.
That's a detail you left out of the open when we talked about this.
No, but it would have been the same if I'd sat there next to her.
Yeah, she'd have been mad. It was ugly last night. So Verlander is back. This is his second start. He went five innings. Didn't look like he was going to go five innings. He had thrown 82 pitches through four. I thought they were going to take him out after four. They brought him back out for the fifth inning, and in eight pitches, he was able to get a 1-2-3 inning, but he did give up four runs. The big hit was a three-run home run from Castellanos, which was one of those, knowing that Nola is on the mound for the Phillies, and you could kind of see how the game was going for the Astros. It was we've seen this movie before with this lineup on those. They have those nights where it's just like, all right, nothing's happening. That three-run home run, that's probably why you were getting that reaction in the YouTube, because it was after Castellanos had hit the three-run home run, and they're like,
I actually started the stream right after that home run.
Oh, did you? Okay.
I was like, all right, yeah. I'm going to go do it now. Yeah. And I was thinking maybe it would get better, and it didn't get better.
It didn't get better. So Verlander has been, he was decent his first start back. Last night was not what you were hoping for. Let's start with Espada. Let's do Espada 2 here, Ben. What have you seen in Verlander's first two starts back?
You know what? I think the sharpness of his pitches have been there. The shapes and, the slider's been pretty good. He threw some really good changeups today, the curveballs. You know, I think he's in a good spot moving forward. You know, I don't want to, outside of the third inning, I thought he threw the ball really well. I know he's going to build from this, make some adjustments, and he'll be pretty good in the next one.
Okay, so Espada, typically, classically optimistic. That's who Joe Espada is. Let's see how Justin Verlander views his first two starts back.
It's okay. I felt like first outing was a little bit better than this one. I think it's kind of to be expected a little bit. It's kind of like spring training. You get out there in the first game and things feel fresh, and then all of a sudden it's like, all right, not as fresh next time out. So, fairly pleased with the pitch shapes and some of the results I'm getting. Slider particularly, I feel like it's been pretty good. obviously not pleased with the overall results, but just got to continue to work and move in the right direction. Felt like, like you talked about, Julio, one inning, really one pitch, that I would really like back. And so when you have one pitch that ruins a game like that, in some sense it's really frustrating. In other senses, it's like, okay, it was just one pitch. It wasn't like I was getting hit all over the yard. So I always try to stay positive.
Yeah, it wasn't like it was a bad pitch or anything, but Verlander said he went away from his instincts and throwing that slider. For his own psychological well-being and health, it's good to frame it as, okay, it was one pitch, and like, okay, yeah, there were two guys on base that led to it being a three run.
Yeah.
I was like, okay. I mean, it was a bit trafficky there too, when the double play in the first or second inning got.
Did they give him two extra runs for that one pitch. Swing?
That's a hell of a one pitch that put two guys on base. All right.
Yeah. So Verlander, Verlander, it's first two starts back. It is what it is.
Can I ask you one thing?
Sure.
Is Verlander a little chunky right now?
Okay. I asked myself that same thing.
If you were asking it, I was asking it.
Off the mound, I'm like, okay, he doesn't. Because Verlander has always had a, like, for an elite athlete, a strange body type, right?
Well, he's got kind of a dad body, right?
Yeah.
Like, he's not fat, but it's not like he's muscular or anything. He just looks like a guy.
He looks like a guy. But like, I would say early on in his Astros career, like, when he'd be out there on the field, like, celebrating an ALCS win or something, and he'd have on like the sleeveless tight tank top. You're like, all right, this guy's fit. Like,
he's fit.
But coming off the mound, I'm like, okay, there's like a half an inch kind of hanging over the belt right there,
Yeah. I feel like he might not be at his prime weight right now.
Right.
I mean, he just has a long time, rehabbing and everything.
Does a neck injury prevent you from getting your cardio in or your workouts in that
you
want?
It shouldn't. But it's usually, the body weight is almost always more tied to what you're putting in your mouth, not what you're doing with your cardio or anything.
Diet, yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe Kate took a cooking class or something, was spoiling him a little bit.
Do you think Kate's a good cook?
I would imagine they seem like, well, you know, I bet they cook together a lot. Yeah. I know, you know, they're kind of into that Epicurean lifestyle, the wine and all that. So they probably have a good time with the family. Kids are getting to an age where they're teaching their daughter how to maybe help out with the meals. So maybe he was a little too much of a family man while he was his neck was injured.
And can we really punish him for that? You know, like if he's putting family first, you know.
Well, the Phillies sure did. They punished him.
Castellanos took him to the woodshed. Yeah.
Screw your family.
Yeah. I could see them like Kate and Justin being like one of those couples that does like those Sur La Table cooking classes for like mm-hmm. 70, you know, like $65 a head, and they go learn how to make vegetable lasagna or something like that.
I'm guessing they go ahead and spring for private lessons, but still, yeah.
That's true. I do put my regular folk things on people sometimes. Yeah.
I just wouldn't. Not that they would feel above it or anything. It would just be a pain in the ass, you know?
Oh, yeah.
You're Verlander, you commit to like a 6-week class of going there with. If there's one psychotic fanboy in the room, it's going to be a miserable experience.
That's true.
For you.
Yeah, no. We've done the like just the single lesson, like the one time. That's usually I usually get Amy one as a Christmas gift every year.
Yeah,
it's because it gives us something to do together. You know, so we'll get. You know, if you go to Sur La Table and you go on their website there, you can pick and they've got all sorts of different things. You can learn how to make macaroons and you can learn how to make lasagna and you can, and it's fun. There's usually like three or four other couples and. There used to be alcohol. I don't know if they still do alcohol there. You know, a little wine
really?
To go
oh,
with
so
it.
Oh, really? Yeah, you're drinking a little bit while you're doing it.
Yeah, I don't know if they still do that. But yeah, it's fun. I recommend it. This is not a paid endorsement or anything. It's just I'm trying to make sure that our listeners' marriages can be the best marriages they can be.
Will they let you do it if you pronounce it Sur La Table? Because, frankly, it seems a little snooty sometimes doing the, oh, yeah, we're going to go to Sur La Table.
They do. They do, because they like money, but they look at you different.
They look at you.
Yeah, when you say it that way. They do.
There's no way you're cracking a C+.
Cretan. Oh, my God. Listen. Listen to this guy. We're getting a lot of texts on the Texans and the roster. We've all watched enough football to know who has it and who doesn't. Pierce is not the same guy as his rookie year.
Yeah, I largely concur, and I'm worried. I'm not overly worried right this moment just because of the way the roster is composed. Sean and I decided yesterday that what would have really enraged us was if they got rid of Akers and kept Damian.
Yes.
Because then, and put Damian right there at backup running back. I think that the most likely scenario in my mind is that Nick and D'Amico think, all right, well, maybe it'll click for Damian at some point. My biggest concern is just the lack of physicality in his game compared to when he was the one of the best young running backs in the league 2 years ago. And that's something that is, you know, like that's independent of good blocking or not. And also, there were a couple plays in the preseason where the blocking wasn't perfect, but I know that the old Damian would have gotten at least 3 or 4 yards on it, where with Damian this year, it ended up being a 1 yard loss or no gain. So that's the part where I'm okay, I'm open to it, but they can't do what they did last year, which was wait forever to make a decision on it. And last year it was worse because Damian was the guy. He was your starting tailback. And they waited for it to click and waited for it to click. And ultimately it was an injury that forced their hand on the decision because they saw how much better it was with Devin Singletary in there. So I mean, does this turn into a 2-year experiment? They can't do that. Not this year. This is a Super Bowl caliber roster. And we've got a little bit of time if you want to see if it clicks for him, but you can't spend the whole year doing it.
No, every Damian Pierce carry right now, you're burning daylight is the way.
And there's
I look
some
at
other
it.
Guy out there right now on the waiver wire who has looked better in the last year and 3 months than Damian has.
No doubt about it. And I think they're. I know they. You know, I know this is a 53-man roster, but 11 o'clock this morning is the deadline to put in waiver claims. If you had to guess, I'll put the over under at 1.5. How many new Houston Texans do you think we have once the waiver wire pickups are done?
I think 3. I think a cornerback. Over. I think an offensive lineman.
Mm-hmm.
And then potentially either a running back or a, well, I mean, they've got 5 running backs right now. And I don't think they, I think they're going to wait. I think they want to run this experiment a little bit longer with Damian.
I agree with that. Yeah.
So not a running back, but linebacker potentially.
Yeah, linebacker was mine. That's what I was going to say too. Yeah.
Look at you and I, simpatico.
Simpatico, man. I did really good on my, I was texting you yesterday. I was so excited when the 53 came out. I'm like, I got to text somebody. I got, it's
you. Thank you for letting me be the one.
Yeah. I got 47 out of 53. I was very happy with my performance here. And three of the ones.
Let's focus on the negative. Who'd you screw up?
Three of the ones I didn't get went on IR.
Okay. Oh, wait, you know what? Yes. Yeah. Okay. Good. I'm glad you're bringing this up.
Yeah.
We haven't talked about it yet.
Right. So Keenum went on IR. Heinisch went on IR.
Okay.
And Christian Harris went on IR.
Yeah.
Is that the one you wanted to talk about? Christian Harris.
We're in the Kyle Tucker zone with Christian Harris.
We are. Yeah, we are. Oh, my God. I knew I felt something. Yes, we're in the Kyle Tucker zone.
Somebody told me in the first couple days of camp when we were all trying to figure out, wait a second, wasn't Christian Harris just doing interviews a couple days ago about how awesome he felt? Then he's not out there at camp on the first day. And somebody told me it wasn't a big deal. And now looking back on it, that was my Kyle Tucker moment.
Yes.
That was when he got hit in the shin. It happens. He'll be all right. Probably miss a couple days. And now here we are. And Christian Harris is not ready for football.
Yeah.
And it was just something that it was on nobody's radar on day one of training camp.
Nope.
And it just goes on and on and on and on.
Well, and what makes it, in a weird way, what makes it worse is that he tried to come back and practice at the Sunday, the night practice that they had. And he was out there for like 20 minutes and then went back in the building. And then he's not out there at all again anymore. So I don't know what to think at this point. I don't think they're going to provide a lot of great answers for us as to what it is. But now, like, the tell is that he's on IR because this means he's out for at least a month. You know, like he's done for 4 weeks. I think if there was any chance that Christian Harris could be back by, say, week three, they would have just carried him on the roster. That's how that's kind of the nature of how thin this position is right now. You know?
And the way I feel about it right now, you know, when Denico Autry got pinched for his suspension, the way I explained it was, look, yeah, if you want to be elite, this hurts. Like, it hurts not having one of a guy that you paid a lot of money to in the offseason who was super productive last year. In terms of being an elite defense, this hurts. But it's not the end of the world.
Yeah.
Now, with Christian Harris, I feel the same way, except I got to add that to the Denico Autry part. You've lost two of your impact dudes in your front seven.
Yeah.
So whatever percentage that is, 30% or however, whatever, that's a big deal. What, 27.5%?
Well,
in terms of being elite, you're not quite where you hoped you would be.
They're both above the line of being. They're both plus football players. They're not just pluggers out there. You know what I
mean?
And so I would say coming into the season, Seth, in your front seven, those are two of your top five guys. You know, obviously Will Anderson Jr., obviously Danielle Hunter, obviously Azeez Al-Shaair. I think Christian Harris and Denico Autry on paper back in April and May were your next two best players there. You know, it's just in terms of sheer talent. So
28.6% of your front seven.
Yeah,
That's the whole thing. Yeah.
Good job, Seth.
I said 27.
We're close. Give him a ding,
that's
Ben.
Close
give him a ding. Give him a ding.
I used to be
really
so
close.
I used to be so good at math in my head, and now I'm just a decrepit mess.
You were close. It's okay. Payne and Pendergast with you. The other thing I'm not happy about this because I like Noah Brown as a player, but they cut Noah Brown.
Yeah.
And I was shocked that people I would talk to out of practice and on social media just thought Noah Brown, even with his shoulder injury that kept him out for like 4 weeks, that he's Jamar Chase or something, that he's a given to make the team. I'm like, he's a one-year, $4 million guy. There's Noah Brown. I know he had two good games last year. He's got C.J. Stroud as quarterback, too, you know?
Well, he's got, and honestly, I think increasingly, Bobby Slowick as his offensive coordinator. Now, who in the pass game, at least, I think has really turned into something.
Yeah.
We'll see if he can actually coordinate a run game this year. Mm-hmm. But there's going to be more Noah Browns. along the way.
Right.
As long as CJ continues on the path he's on right now, there's going to be more Noah Browns. There's going to be more guys that can kind of be the beneficiary of a well-constructed offense and a really good quarterback. But he also, because I saw some people wonder why he wasn't traded, perhaps, or that he didn't get a trade offer. The injuries are a big deal for a guy like Noah Brown. He missed 7 games last year, I believe, and he's been injured all training camp. So it is what it is.
7 games with like multiple injuries, too. You know, like he was really banged up.
And speaking of the number 7, which it seems to be a theme right now, is 7 wide receivers is a healthy number of receivers.
Yeah.
That's, you know, standard would be about 6.
Yep.
So there's a chance that maybe they're fielding offers or contemplating what to do. But it's the running backs and wide receivers are heavily weighted in numbers right now. I don't know if they have an urgency to change that at all. It's a matter of those were... If you include Damian in it and his upside, they look at those as deep positions.
Yep, for sure. All right, we'll do headlines next. We'll circle back to the Texans and the 53-man roster. We'll dip our toe with the Astros again. The owners voted on something yesterday with the NFL that kind of a low-key game changer, maybe. Certainly for owners it will be. We'll talk about that as well. That's coming up next in headlines.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
All right, headlines. We'll start off. Cut down day yesterday, and the names were rolling in for the Texans. I would say the biggest news yesterday is that Cam Akers made the team. So running back had been a big talking point. So Damian Pierce, Cam Akers, both on the 53-man roster. We'll see what changes, if anything. Maybe the two of them are just competing to be the backup to Joe Mixon right now, Seth.
I think that they're different types too. So I think a game plan by game plan thing. There's going to be times where if Damian, you know, can do what apparently they think he can still do, then they're going to use it. You know, they'll use Damian when they need to, you know, be a hammer to a nail or versus different types of fronts. But with Cam Akers. You know, Cam's the one I think that could most benefit from some of these light boxes that the offense will face. When teams are really concerned about just not getting destroyed by these top 3 wide receivers and they've only got 6 or 7 guys in the box, that's when Cam can maybe really go to work. So, but I'm guessing the way they envision it is, okay, yeah, but when you need hard-fought yardage, you put in British Brooks as a fullback. You've got Damian Pierce as a running back, and maybe there is something still in there. I'm skeptical, and I can't stress this enough, Sean. Look, I'm going to be wrong about things. That's just life. It's inevitable. So sometimes I like to choose what I can genuinely hope I'm wrong about.
Yeah.
I really, really, really hope I'm wrong about Damian Pierce
for multiple reasons. Me too.
I love Damian Pierce, and then also just for selfish reasons, the team, if he can be what he was in 2022, it could be really, really good for the Texans.
Absolutely.
So I genuinely, without any irony whatsoever, I hope I'm dead wrong about it, and maybe it's just a matter of something clicking for him. But they can't waste time on it
No.
if it's not working out early in the season.
No, I'm with you on that. And I think I was listening to John Harris and Mark Vandermeer break down the 53 last night on Texans All Access. And I think Johnny kind of framed it similar to how you just did with Pierce and Akers, which is sometimes the matchups might dictate both the overall matchup of who they're playing, or maybe even just in-game the situation might dictate who you're using. So Johnny put it out there, and I think this is a good PSA, like, don't get too caught up in the depth chart. Other than Joe Mixon being the starter, don't get too caught up in the depth chart at running back.
But I would say, too, like, if you put it into baseball terms, you have a vision in your head for what Damian Pierce should be, but don't be one of those guys, manager that's like, well, you know, Yordan's a lefty, so we're gonna bring Abreu in here versus this lefty pitcher. Like, no, like, okay, a guy is or isn't.
Yeah.
If Abreu's not the guy, lefty or lefty, don't mess around.
Right.
The Abreu analogy, which people keep bringing up, is just way too on the nose in a lot of respects with Dameon Pierce right now.
It is. It's
you're holding on to some vision of what it was in the past.
Yep.
And you can't burn daylight with this experiment.
You cannot. Astros lose last night to the Phillies. Oh, by the way, Nick Caserio press conference today, 9 a.m., talking about the 53-man roster. We will carry it live here on Sports Radio 610. Astros lose last night to the Phillies, 5-0. Aaron Nola was outstanding for the Phillies. Astros couldn't get anything going. Verlander, 5 innings, 4 earned runs, not his best outing. One thing we didn't touch on in the previous segment with the Astros, Seth, is they are signing Jason Hayward. Former All-Star. Well, it's funny, Jason Hayward, former All-Star. He was an All-Star his rookie year like 15 years ago, and since then he's been very highly paid to be kind of average. Like he's
hitting above 200, Sean.
Yeah.
In this day and age.
He's a five-time Gold Glover, so that, I mean, they do need some outfield defense right now.
Jace, since June 4th, yeah, as Chandler Rome put it this morning, they're the ninth worst outfield in baseball. Chaz McCormick, Mauricio Dubon, and Jake Myers, none of them have an OPS higher than 591 since June 1st, excuse me, or since June 4th.
Yeah.
It's been meek. It's been meek and bleak.
Chaz back to Sugarland, man.
It's been cheek is what it is.
It's been cheek, yes. Yeah. Chaz back to Sugarland, man. That's sad. Are you sadder about Dameon Pierce or Chaz McCormick right now?
Oh. Dameon Pierce.
Yeah, me too. Chaz will be
good. Yeah. Pierce, because look, okay, this is the other thing about Dameon Pierce, real quick.
Yeah.
I honestly, to put it into, like, from my own personal experience, mm-hmm, when I spent the first five years of my career in Jacksonville in a 4-3 defense, and I was okay. When I got here, and Dom Capers and Vic Fangio were able to run their actual defense, because I actually had Dom Capers as a coordinator in Jacksonville, but he was running a 4-3 because of personnel. It wasn't really his chosen defense.
Yeah.
It changed everything for me completely. I became a completely different player simply because it was a better scheme fit for me. Mm-hmm. And they put me in a role where I became a different player in a good way. And I think about that with Dameon.
Yeah.
For a guy who plays a position where, honestly, on average, the next 2 years of Damian's career should be the best years of his career and then a decline after that.
Right.
For just his sake, I it might be best for him to go somewhere else and be in a better system and maybe it clicks for him.
Yeah.
Because he plays a position where you just don't have much time to do what you want to do in the NFL.
Yeah. We'll talk more about the roster in the 7 o'clock segment coming up here. The owners in the NFL, Seth, yesterday vote yes on allowing teams to sell up to a 10% stake to private equity funds, and the private equity funds have already been vetted. There's only a short list of them that they'll allow to buy into these teams. So this is a way for owners who want to get an influx of cash to do some things.
Yeah.
This is kind of a creative way for them to only 10%. The private equity fund wouldn't have any voting power or anything like that. It's really just a way to get cash. You brought this up yesterday when we saw the headline, and this got you kind of excited a little bit.
Well, it got me excited just from a business perspective because honestly, the NFL wants to keep it a tight-knit community so they can have control over things, et cetera, et cetera. As it is in any business, if you wanted to really cash in, you go public, and that's when you regret it 10 years later because your company becomes a shadow of what it once was, and you're beholden to short-term goals instead of long-term goals and everything.
Right.
So they don't want to get it to that point where it's just cutthroat business all the time, but it will be a hot commodity for private equity firms, not just because of the quality of the investment, but there's also my brother-in-law is involved in this on the NBA side of things. Mm. He raises money for private equity firms that are involved in NBA.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a bit of an ego element to it, too. You know, for the same reason that people will buy pub offerings of shares of the Packers in which you can never sell it. You can't, there's no dividends or anything. No. It's a meaningless piece of paper.
Yep.
And yet people want to own a piece.
I'm an owner.
Packers.
Yeah,
yeah. Like there's a little bit of that too with when you bring the private equity into it. So they're gonna get a lot of money off.
They are. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see because we'll get a gauge for kind of what the valuations of teams are now, as opposed to having to wait like every 5 or 6 years for a team to get sold. Like we'll get some more immediate short term view on what these teams are worth. I read an article about this whole thing yesterday and it was really interesting to read just like how the NFL, like there's no voting power for these private equity funds. They've vetted them all already.
Yeah, so it's not a complete open market or anything, and they want to be very careful that I think of the NBA in some ways, they probably look at the NBA and think, all right, it's become a little too much about the business side of it.
Yeah.
And you want to try to keep some of the core ethos of the league intact.
Yeah. One of the big reasons they're doing this is they're just running out of billionaires. Like you're running out of people, like individuals who can afford to buy into the NFL. Like
which depresses the prices.
Yeah.
You know, it's not as much of a wide open market.
Yeah.
If you that's always been my dream, is to create a league where it's publicly owned and traded and everything, just for the experience. Cause you could, it might be the one reckless business model that could actually compete with the NFL.
My God.
And it would be ugly as hell.
Oh.
Because
so fun.
There would be so many. No, but it would be fun because there would be, I think there would be so many bad decisions made for the short term juicing of stock prices and everything that,
yeah.
it would be dramatic as all get out.
It would ruin the sport we love, but it would be fun as hell.
Yeah.
All right. Our baseball talk in this segment is presented by T-Mobile. If you're just getting into your car, we talked baseball a few minutes ago. I know that was football we just did now. It's presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile and you can get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at t-mobile.com/switch. I would say one of the most despised players in recent Houston history was a real inspiration to young C.J. Stroud. And it's not Deshaun Watson. Wait till you hear what C.J. Stroud had to say. Who inspired him to become the player that he became? It's not even a football player. We'll let you hear that coming up next.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.